Accession number 11377, reel 24.
Mr. W. Bateman, reel 24. About what date did you leave Belgium and move to Poperinghe?
Well, it was about the back end of November or the beginning of December. We got into Poperinghe and we were building it in private houses.
How long were you there?
Well, tell the truth, I can't tell. I don't know, it was a week or a fortnight. And then we got orders to... These young lads that was with the other was here, they were left behind. I don't know where they were left behind, but now they didn't come with us. We embarked on one of the trains, and I always thought the Indian trains were bad enough, but when we got the Belgian ones, they were worse still. All wooden seats, and drafty as well. And we set off, and we ended up at Ostend. So we said, well, we're so far so good, like. So we got off the train, and they said, right, I'll form up on the quayside. So the master's up to the, I don't know whether it was a ferry or a troop ship. But now we went on and we stopped on deck all the way, like. It was quite a good volley. There's no hardly any swell on the, considering, like. And... it wasn't cold, and I think it was about 10 hours ride across, and we disembarked at Southampton. And
how did you feel coming home after?
Oh,
all
it felt lovely. So what's the point? No, we're wondering what they were going to do when we got us back. So. They marched us from Southampton Station up into some waste ground in Southampton itself. And it was about dinner time. We got there. And then we got a meal brought to us. Where it come from, I don't know. But we had to queue up. I think there's some army camp somewhere. And before I forget... The village I was thinking about before the invasion was Romsey. It was between Romsey and Shirley, the camp. So I said, well, I said, you thought it stuck us back up to that camp again where we were left for the invasion. He says, no, he says, you're going to stop here. So we lounged about there, like. We weren't allowed to leave the place at all. And we didn't have any idea where we were going to go, where we were going to end up at. So all of a sudden, about 6 o'clock at night, it was about after tea. We went down to the station, and I can't remember, did we get a tea on the station? But now we're about half an hour on the train before it set off. I can't remember how we got a tea, and I think any tea. And we got nothing more, and we travelled on the train. It was all dark, like, and everything was in darkness. There was no lights, and we didn't know where we were. So we decided to fall asleep. So we all dossed down the best way we could, like. And what a change was to be an English train, nice soft seats, because there was no corridor, and there was, I think it was six of us in the carriage, in a compartment. So we managed to get ourselves stretched out and everything, like, with all our equipment, we shoved our equipment up on the rack, like. So we dusted ourselves down and we knew nothing more. We must have been tired because all of a sudden we got right over, disembarked, get yourselves out, you have arrived. And we ended up in Skipton, Yorkshire. So we got out of the train, like, they formed up. And this is when the RSM lights started off quick march. And he did the light infantry ceremonial march. And what a job. He had no equipment on, and we were all full packed, full rigged, don't we? Full pack and everything on. He had his sandbrower on, that's all he had. And there he was, marching in front of us, 140 to the minute. the sergeants, some of the sergeants played war. We let him get on. So he was away about 100 yards in front of us, like. And he stopped, like, and he said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Well, one of the sergeants said," he said, "he said, you've got no equipment on." He said, "You've got your Sam Brown on." He says, "We've got full patch and order on here." He says, "We can't go to 140 Sunday morning." He says, "120, yes, 110. He says, "The rope march rate, pace." He said, "Not Sunday morning rate." Because he was only I think he was a new RSM. I don't think he knew. I think himself he was a conscript, you know, one that come in.
Do you know his name?
I can't remember his name. But some of the sergeants was they'd been in the 6th Battalion since the Desert days and the Dunkirk days. And they knew what they were to do. He says, we never did an out like this before till he'd go. He was a new face. So we eventually got into Skipton itself, in the centre of Skipton. And we got shoved in this, in like a warehouse place. And there was double bunks. There was some beds there. Some had been there before, like. So we built this there. And they said, now what's the trouble, like, so where have we got our meals then? I don't know, tell the truth. I think it was downstairs. We were upstairs, that was right. And they said, there's a dining room downstairs, so we had to help ourselves. And after a couple of days, we got ourselves sorted out, and I was moved. They says, right away, he says, you're going up into a big house. There's a Nissen hut up in outskirts of about half a mile outside of Skipton it was. And there was like a Nissen hut. And when I got in, there was a couple of beds there. Then all the rest was rifles, ammunition, Bren guns. And there was mattresses, blankets stored up. And I says, oh, what's this like? So well, there and nothing happened. Like, it was getting on for Christmas, 44. And this is right, oh, yeah. He said, we've got, I think it was 10 days leave. And that's when I got home. And the missus, when I got home, she says, I knew I'd see you before Christmas. So when I went back to Skipton, this is right, or he says, you're going up, you have to be transferred up to F Company at the place called Cross Hills. And they were in a big mansion there. It was a cotton next to a cotton mill. And they said the army had took that off it, banged the owner of the cotton mill leg. So we were billeted there. I was went put in the stores there. And then I was there for about a week. And he says, oh, you can't sleep in the stores because I was. There wasn't much room, like. So what they did, there was, I was the armoury storeman. There was the MT driver. There was a bloke on the police. I can't remember. He was not MT driver was an artillery man. The police regiment of policemen was. Then there was a bloke called Bedford. He was the clothing storeman. And then there was a young lad called Patterson. He was a waiter in officers and sergeants. See, they had combined the officers and sergeants and messed together. Patterson, he was a grade C or something. And he was unfit to send away, like. So they billeted us up in a little wee chapel. Ah. No, we ended up by having gaslights. There was electric, but there was no wiring or nothing for it. There was a main, like, so we had a gas light there, and the washing facility was stone cold water. So we set ourselves down, and we used to go down to this to get our meals. We used to go down to this little chapel. There was a chapel down in Cross Hills, and the cooks was at the back, like, and we used to. everything down in like a Vladana place, like enough to, I think, seat about 20 tables set out. It was also a little villages who could go down and have a social evening in with the chapel people there. There was a canteen, but it was up in a church. I think it was an old church there, but it used to close at 5 o'clock. Between five, it was only open for a couple of hours, and used to, I think it was about 6 o'clock when it shut down. And there was a pubs there, and we got quite on, well on with the local people, like.
What were you doing?
I was the sergeant, that we got some RSC blokes, and some of these pioneer blokes had been transferred from these non-combatant units into to be trained as infantrymen.
What were they like?
Well, they were all young lads. They were all right.
Did they train up pretty well?
They trained up. We had nothing to do with them, see. And the CO, Vox, he says, oh, he says, you're a signaller, aren't you? He says, right, oh, he says, you can be the company signaller. So they give us an 18 set. It wouldn't be back unless we used it. We used to go on schemes with them, see. We wanted to just go through the deer, and then we had one or two nice schemes to go out. And they said, well, we just have this radio just to make believe, like. And then mainly it was just routine drill and that. And this was getting all, it was all the same till, and we could, we were allowed to come over the weekends. There was nothing to do after Friday night. Just nearly all the officers and that was away, like. Then there was only the duty officer on. And then also with being a rifleman, I was to have to man the telephone. See, there was a telephone in the office, and you had to man it at night time. We took turns. There was usually only one night a week, night shifts on, because the clerk did it through the day. But there was about seven of us, and we used to do one night a week. Well, I just enjoy, because there's a couple of pals of mine was at Brigade HQ, and they was to rig them up. It was Bill Herdman and Oscar Rennick, who was talking.
Were they ex-1st Battalion men? Were they ex-1st Battalion
men? Yes, ex-1st Battalion men. They were the... how were they come to leave us in the desert? I can't remember. Because Bill Herdman, I think he went sick from Mers Matru and Oscar Rennick. And they got into Brigade HQ at the headquarters in Cairo. And next thing we knew that they were there with the 6th Battalion in the 50 Div. And then and I never saw them anymore, like, till we got back into Skipton. And they went to... No, Bill HQ, Bill Herdman, he came into the Britannia HQ at Skipton to man the telephone there. And Oscar Rennick went into Brigade HQ. And there was Jimmy Sixpence, he was the full corporal. But I don't think there was a signal sergeant. What happened to the signal sergeant? That's the reason I had to revert to private, because Jimmy Six was senior to me. Crosswaite, he was he came back. Crosswaite, when he came back to Poplins, he came as adjutant. But he didn't come to Skipton with us.
Who was commanding at Skipton?
Oh, I don't know. What is it? I think it was Wood.
And you said you quite enjoyed being at Skipton.
Oh yes, I got myself eventually got myself a push bike. Because there was hardly any buses. There was the buses used to stop at run at 5 o'clock. So there was a cinema at Cross Hills, and one cinema, and the public house, and plenty of public, but he hadn't the money to go drinking every night, so we could go down into Skipton, that's one night a week. There would be one picture on all the week. Then I got managed to get myself a buyer, one of the locals there. He had a bike in their backyard, like so. I says, do you want to sell it? So he says, aye. So I give him $5 for it. And there was a ride down to Skipton. Well, see, I could get it, go down with and have a natter with Bill Erdman.
And was this the routine for the time that you were there?
Yes, just routine there. And then one day I got a puncture on the bike and I said, no, well, I'm going to get back. Like he said, well, there's a bus back at 6 o'clock with the workers back to Cross Hills. So he says, I'll arrange it and get your puncture mended. So the next night, the next time I come down, I think it was about 2 or 3 days later on, I went down. He says, I've got your puncture mended. It took it, I think it's cost half a crown. Marvellous when you come to think, half a crown. So that was the main routine. Oh, and then they said, all right, or the we'll. So what they decided, now it was getting on for. It was getting on for, I think it was September 45 now, June, well, it was back end there. And they decided, they said, oh, well, he says, you're old soldiers, me. He says, we're getting a date for demob. Because the war had finished in Europe then, in April, hadn't it? And he says, right, I said, what would you like to do? Well, I said, I was going to go on the post office telephones later, with Baynex England. Oh, they said, we haven't got one. So I said, is there anything else you'd like to do? I said, I'd like to drive a car or a truck, do a driving license, because I said, drive a motorbike, because I had a motorbike license. Oh, this is right, we'll arrange that. So we got truck tuition, driving trucks, like. And this artillery bloke that drove the truck, he was teaching us in his meantime. He said, when he used to go on trips down to with quick store, he'd take one of us down there and learn us to drive. Sure, quite a bit fun there, like. And so one day, I'll tell you this way, the law kept coming up, and they got onto this storm, and like, and this is, we tell that somebody's been offering blankets and clothes for sale. He says, oh, I haven't. Well, he says, we've got a rumour down here, like. So, right, all like. So, when I goes down the, we went one Friday night, we went down to the pub, and there was a bloke, got hold of us, like. He says, you from the, up there, like. He says, what's the chance of getting some boots? Oh, I says, boots? I says, I can't get you any ready boots. I says, army has the rifles. So, this other lad, what was his name? Stafford. Jim Stafford. He says, I'll get that pair of boots. What size do they want? He says, size 10. Righto. So, righto. He says, we'll see you later on, mate. He says, come back next week, like. All right, all right. So when he comes out the pub, he says, you're not getting any very boots. He says, you remember the very coppers coming up? He says, it's a very plant. Because we couldn't get any clothes out like that. If we managed to get it, we'd get them for ourselves. We couldn't, because there's double checking everything. It went out the stores, everything had to be signed for. If he even issued a pound of pants, the lad had to sign for them. And the colour sergeant was always there to sign the book and everything. So we, that's what happened. And so it was nearly routine, like. And then the notice came up for demob. So I said, oh, right, also, I looked over there. And I was due for demob on November the 8th. So I wrote through to my mate, who'd unfit. He'd come from Belgium, Jordi Sparrow. I wrote to him, like, he'd been demobbed. Because he was unfit for, he'd got to go and bum up, he like. So I said, I'm getting demobbed on November the 8th. And he wrote back, he says, I was demobbed in September.
So what happened to you?
So we handed all our equipment in, like, and just had the bare khaki leg, one suit of khaki and a pair of boots, an overcoat and cap leg, and they got on their truck to go down to Skipton headquarters. It was about 7:30, because we had to be in the the CO's office for 9 o'clock, because he was going to shake hands and say to Martin, is like, give us our demob books. So we went, got down there, and we all got lined up, and they all Colonel Vaux, he shook all our hands, like. But I'm trying to think of this other officer's name. And so we got on the truck, and we went to Splendor Camp. I said, bah, this is a familiar place. The bloke says to me, why? Like, I said, I was here in 1933. I says, fire me rifle course. So stuck in a billet there. No meals, there was nothing, no to eat, like. Then we're there till, I think it was about 3 o'clock, I think it was. This is right off you go. Back to York, we had to go back to York to Fulford Baddocks. So I always remember this was there, and this is right over alphabetical order. We all had to go in certain places, alphabetical order, being B and B. Like, I went in certain place, like, and this is where call felt like. So once they got started, it was there for an hour, I think. And once it got started, we went right through it and we were out in an hour.
What did that entail?
We entailed, I can't remember. They says, write all your name. So they took our demob book, and they says, write all, they says, first of all, they give all the details, the name and everything, like, and then they give us, I didn't know whether they give us any money or whatever. We got some. I always remember, I got a post office book with £92 in it. And also got a separate book with one day's pay. It was the one I lost in Malta. I'd been refunded. I said, I remember this, like. So, and then they said, right, oh, this is one for, like, come and took us down to the. Down to the civilian, he says, right, or down at the where the other clothes were. He says, right, or get yourselves rigged out. He says, see what you can pick for yourselves. So I went around, now I picked myself a pinstripe suit, a trilby hat, and a light trench coat, and a pair of shoes. Because it didn't give us any socks, like. And then we took them all off. This is right on. No, if he's a khaki, he says, you can keep your suit of khaki. So we kept the suit of khaki. But he says, if you want to keep your top coat, you'll have to pay 10 shilling. Oh, I says, I wasn't bothered, like. But I said, no, I says, it wouldn't be a bad idea, like. So I says, tiddly, that didn't bother, like. So the right on them, and then we went back. We were still in khaki. We were dressed in khaki, like, because we tried all the clothes on. And then we bundled them all up, and then we got them all put and parcelled up into a parcel.
Was there anyone outside trying to get you to sell what you got?
No. And this is right on. This is if you want, where are we going to? They said they all made out, because we went through, like, we told them where we belonged to. And I got a watch for Darlington, and then they took us down in the from Fulford Barracks in their truck down to, I think they took us in down at the station, York Station. And when we got on the train, like, there was a load of RAF men had been demobbed and all. I think nearly every, there was, I think it was the troop train we all demobbed people on. And there was a couple got off at in Darlington. Mm. And then when I got home, like, I got to know, we sat in the carriage with these, and there was a boy called Smith. He ended up by being a news agent in Fondgate.
Had they not asked you to stay on as a regular?
Well, before I got demobbed, I got a note to say that with us being an ex-miner, would I be able, would I like to get on demobbed on Class B and go down the mines again? I said, not likely. I said, that's why I joined the army, to get away from the mines. Mm. So when I got home, the missus was, I think she worked at Daycliffe, at the munitions factory. I had to wait to come home. So I got leave, that was from November the 8th, right up till February 46. Got paid, and I was actually, and I got put on the Class Z reserve. Mm. And then when my time came, I said, well, I have to go down to the Dole office. So I went and signed on the door, and I said, what's the chances of, how would you get on to the telephone engineers? Like, he says, oh, you left a right to Middlesbrough. So I wrote the telephone manager at Middlesbrough, and I got a letter to say they weren't recruiting for the time being. No, I says, that's all right, Lee. So I said, will you keep, I wrote back and I said, will you keep my name down? And then I got a job at the steelworks, in Summerson Steelworks. And then I was there 3 years. I was quite different. I went as labourer first because I hadn't been worked in a steelwork. And I ended by down a acetylene burner, burning heads. And then all of a sudden I got a letter to say there was a vacancy in the telephone. Would I go to the telephone man, the engineer's office on one Saturday morning? So I said, right, so I went through there. And I mentioned it. I says, I got a letter to say you weren't recruiting. When I got his job, he said, have you kept the letter? I says, no. I says, I didn't. He said, I wish you had, because he said, we were recruiting. He says, I don't know who sent it out. But he says, I noticed your name's been on the list. He said, we didn't know you'd been applying before. So I applied to the, got on the post office. I put a week's notice into submissions, and that's where I ended up. I ended up being nearly 30 years on the telephone engineers.
Did you find it difficult to settle down to civilian routine?
Well, at first, it was. I, very bad. It took me a long time to get used. Now then, it did. Do you know what? The first, when I got went to the started work, I was all right while I was with the missus and on leave, because I was in still in khaki, like. I didn't bother to put my civvy suit on and out. I said, well, I says, I'm still in the house, so I kept my khaki on. So, bah, I says, when I went to study work, like, I says, bah, what a difference. And the first thing I was on, it was my mates, the chaps that I found out that we've been them lads all the time. You did not miss them. And because the chaps at the works weren't the same. So after the war was finished, like, all together, like, I got through the association, DLI, so I wrote to, with being a member. This is right, they said, we're starting the reunions. And that changed my life altogether. Changes. I said, no, I says, I'm back to normal now. I says, I'll see the lads as they are in Civvy Street. And we enjoyed ourselves. When we go through to that reunion at the Durham there, squished together, and we were over the moon. Everybody seemed to pleased to see you. We handshaking, and that was aching. It took me nearly about a couple of hours to get round the see. See, what are you doing? Get the experiences, and then you'd get one to say, "Well, I've never seen you say it's a desert time. What have you been doing? How did you come on?" "Oh," he said, "I was wounded and I'd been sent home. Some had been sent to Australia, and some had been sent to South Africa." Mm. And then when the Mediterranean was opened, and that a lot of them were sent to England, like. And then we said, got on to some of the lads. This is when I said, "Well, what happened at Kos?" And they were telling us, "Oh, what happened at Kos was a shambles."
Who was the best officer you served under?
Paddy Meir. Crackers. He was a grand fellow, was Paddy Meir. He would listen to you, he would talk to you. And also.